Welcome back to the show a little bit later. Nate's going to share some more fun anecdotes about the Jamaican national team with us. But right now, we have Stan Weber, who's ready to roll. Stan,
I just wanted to show what Nate was talking about.
Yeah, show people, everyone. A lot of times people have no idea what Nate's talking about.
I don't know where the camera is right now.
Right there.
Am I looking in the right direction?
Yep, right there.
This is the offense for Stanford.
You go too deep on every position, pretty
however
much.
However many to play, here's four.
Oh, you got four.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. So you don't. Everyone who's going to play, I put down. I try to play, and there's my Stanford defense.
Any fun anecdotes on there about Stanford?
We did not talk before this, right?
Right.
So this is so organic. These guys have 12 different players whose dads played in the NFL.
Oh.
I thought he was going to say 12 different players have been shot in the face. No, I was like, wow.
That actually is a fun anecdote,
Sam. Yeah, that's good. 12 that played in the NFL.
I look forward to hearing that.
Wow.
No, I mean, I'll tell you a couple of them that are very interesting.
Noteworthy.
Miles Hinton's dad.
Chris Hinton?
Was Chris Hinton.
Hell of an offensive lineman.
Okay.
Was he in the... Is that the Elway trade?
Okay.
Let me see here.
How about Jake Lynch?
John Lynch?
John Lynch just went into the Hall of Fame. He plays on the football team.
That makes sense. John Lynch is in...
He played at Stanford.
Yeah.
How about Gabe Reed? Why would Gabe Reed matter? Gabe Reed's father, Spencer, played football in the NFL, but before that he played at BYU. He went on a two-year LDS mission, did Gabe, before he went to play for Stanford.
Oh, so he's one of those old men that's playing in college.
No, he's the nephew of Andy Reed.
Wow.
I had no idea Andy Reed had a nephew playing Division I football right now.
Gabe Reed, he runs around, he wears number 90, does a fine job out there. But almost every guy, this middle linebacker, Ricky Miyason, his dad, William, was only a part of the 1996 Olympics for the Ivory Coast. I mean, if I went here, I could read probably 75% of the players on this board have famous brothers or parents. It's incredible. I think my son Landry, who's going to be down on the field with him, ought to just start taking some autographs. I mean, it is unbelievable.
But none of them shot in the face.
Right.
I don't know about that one.
So my recollection was correct. The Denver Broncos selected Chris Hinton with the fourth overall pick in the 83 NFL draft, making him the first guard and the first offensive lineman taken. The team traded him to the Baltimore Colts, along with quarterback Mark Herman, for the Broncos' first-round pick in the 1984 NFL draft. Well, no, he was the Broncos and the Broncos' first-round pick, all for the first overall pick in the 83 draft, John Elway. So Chris Hinton was traded for John Elway.
Yeah, but he's an all-pro. He's a superstar. Yeah. But I'm not finished yet. You know who's even a bigger superstar? E.J. Smith, who's going to be playing on the field where his father, Emmett, the all-time leading rusher in NFL history, played for the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow.
And it just goes on and on. Lucas Ungar, an offensive player. Oh, yeah. His grandfather was a part of the Olympics as well. I mean, it's unbelievable. I spent so much time on this because usually you go, let me just see personal relationships if they matter. And I'm spending all day and night noting these things, and that's not watching tape of the team playing. It's just like, are you kidding me? But I had no idea that Andy Reid's nephew, or I assume it's
and
his
he's a defensive
nephew.
Lineman?
He's an outside linebacker
outside
type.
Outside linebacker, okay.
He played some middle linebacker last year. He really runs to the ball. He hustles. Yeah. He plays. They got a few grown-ups because they've got three or four guys that you'd think of being more like BYU, where they sat out 2 years, went on a mission, and then came back and started playing football at Stanford. Wow. So it's a very mature, old football team, smart, with unbelievable bloodlines. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. When you talk about that, it's I feel like we're seeing more and more of this across sports. Like right now in Major League Baseball, there's these legacy players, Fernando Tatis Jr., Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There's all Bobby Witt Jr. There's all these juniors out there that are like star players, and you're seeing it there with this list of Stanford players. Your son Landry, you know, is the son of a Division I football player. And your other son, Stanton, did the same thing. And I wonder, like, obviously the first thing you think of is genetics. Well, their dad must have been a tremendous athlete, and they got some of that athleticism. But I think that an underrated part of it is what was discussed at the dinner table in the Weber house every night when Stanton and Landry were growing up. Like, what did they – what I feel like they were hearing a very educated football mind talk about football all the time.
Well, it's Patrick Mahomes. You know, I didn't predict Patrick Mahomes was going to dominate in the National Football League, but the first thing I did jump on is he's been around the big time.
Yeah.
He knows how it's to be a star, and right now he is such a star, he can't walk anywhere without everyone turning their phone on, and mm-hmm. how do you deal with that personal side and still go out and perform on the football field? You're a human every waking hour of the day. You know, it all comes in. How do you not get cocky, complacent, tired of it, all
but
those
to be
things.
A pro, and, too. He yeah. knows what it is to be a professional.
To right. be consistent every day, to overcome adversity, all the different types of things that you've heard from brilliant sports minds that you've been around in your life, you've passed
it
on to
your kids.
It makes
a big difference. If you know? Your kids will listen, yeah. you can give them a lot of hints. And yeah. usually it goes to the word toughness, that things aren't going to go smoothly.
Right.
And when people, when you have that bad time and people jump on you and want to say you can't do it, don't listen to them. Fight through it. Continue to play to the end of the game. Ohio State last night was losing to Minnesota. There were fans in the stands. Fox was there as you guys played a little audio. You know, were they going to get nervous and start worrying about losing and getting upset and ruining a whole year? No. You just got to go back to work, believe in your fundamentals. And also sometimes the mothers help as well. Because, for instance, I got another one for you. Barrett Miller is a starting left guard. Okay, Barrett Miller's dad, but also his mom, Stacy, played basketball at Emporia State in Kansas.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
That's cool.
Only reason why I'm reading some of these, because as you guys talked about it, and plus, you don't get a chance to talk about these in a game. I mean, right. this will never they'll never come up. You know, I'm not going to ever talk about Barrett Miller. Maybe I will because he's from Kansas,
yeah.
because his parents played at Emporia State. But most of them, you just go, we're never ever going to talk about the right guard. You know?
But the thing is, like, the thing that I think is cool about preparing for a game like this, it's like studying for a semester final where you got a book this big, and only six questions are going to show up on the test. You got to know the whole book in case Barrett Miller ends up.
I want to go to your classes, by the way, where there are only six questions on the final.
Well, I'm talking, you know, like the essay tests or whatever. You
oh,
get, you know,
an essay test.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that's
so
big time.
You're only going to need.
Did you go to Stanford too?
No. I went to Stanford on the call.
I didn't have to take essay tests, I'll have yeah. to say that. Maybe that's why I was a major in accounting.
Yeah, so like, when
I
you do English and
choices.
History, yeah. But like in those things, you got to know all the material, but only 5% of it's going to come up. You just don't know which 5%. So something might happen with Miller through the course of the game, and then it's a natural point to say, hey, by the way, did you know? And then it becomes relevant, but
sometimes,
you can't force it.
Yeah, and sometimes it is relevant. Here's one that might come up. A tight end that's played a good amount of time for Stanford, number 88, Tucker Fisk, is actually going to play both ways. He's going to play defense for the first time. You say, well, how does he learn how to play defense? Well, his dad, Jason, was a 12-year NFL pro and a Stanford grad at defensive end. So he's actually going back to where his dad could give him a few hints of here's how you do it. And maybe he's not going to be an NFL tight end, but he may be able to play on defense. So kind of an interesting story there. And he's a pretty smart guy. He learned how to play the guitar, the piano, and the ukulele without any lessons. So he deserves to be at Stanford, I think.
Mm-hmm. We've got Stan Weber in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hey, remind me the talk back button doesn't work. Tell Drake about that one.
You don't have hand signals yet?
Well, I've got a couple of hand signals. Can't use them on TV, though.
Well, you can't do like the New York Mets one? Like Jake,
no,
I don't
ones,
like this.
The ones that we do can't be on TV. I can tell you right. that.
But you got to do like a third base coach. You got to be able to just, yeah. you know, if you touch the Nike right. on your Missouri shirt
nose,
there.
Nose to chin.
That's right.
But then it could be a fake signal, so no one on TV
well,
can watch every day.
The shoulder, the brush of the left shoulder,
yeah.
and then everything
The indicator
after that.
Means something's coming that's real.
So we had a clip I was going to play yesterday, but we saved it for today from Shane Beamer, the head coach at South Carolina, because, of course, your son Stanton is on the staff down at South Carolina, so I thought this was interesting. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. If people haven't seen this, they have a unique situation right now for their for the game with starting quarterback. They're starting a grad assistant. Play the clip, Jake.
You know, I think it was early on in the summer. I remember Marcus coming up to me and telling me, you do know that Zeb has some eligibility left if we needed it. And I didn't think anything of it. And obviously it was unfortunate that Luke Doty, our quarterback, got hurt. And it wasn't like, oh, my gosh, we need a quarterback because we don't have one. It was honestly early on, we just needed another arm in preseason practice. Most programs are going to have five or six quarterbacks in preseason camp. And at the time we had one in quarantine and we had one hurt, and we literally only had three quarterbacks on our entire program that were out at practice, and we didn't want to try and wear their arms out. So we brought Zeb out, and he's kind of taken the reins from there and done a nice job operating our offense and along with our other quarterbacks.
So he's going to start against Eastern Illinois. He formerly played at Iowa State and North Dakota State. He accepted a spot on Shane Beamer's staff in the offseason. He was helping prepare the quarterbacks for the season, and now he gave up his coaching spot a couple of weeks ago to put on the pads. So let me make sure, does Stanton have any eligibility left? Is there a chance we could see him suit up?
How about that?
I don't know. Because
he asked the NCAA for one of those special 6 years?
Maybe.
Because he was there five, redshirted, played four, didn't have that new rule where you can play four games
right.
and not have it count against you in a redshirt year. But special I do know that Zeb Nolan, it's such a small world, right? Because Zeb was an up-and-coming, very good quarterback at Iowa State and actually started, played great against Oklahoma in Ames, almost upset them. He was an up-and-coming starter, but ran into a little bit of an issue, you know, not playing perfectly. So they said, well, let's just try this Brock Purdy guy.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why he didn't stay at Iowa State is because Brock Purdy was so good. So he transfers to North Dakota State, and one of his best friends there is Trey Lance.
Wow.
Trey Lance was the first guy in the whole world to know that he was going to put the uniform on for South Carolina. That's how good of friends he is with Trey Lance, who's now the 49ers quarterback.
Well, you transfer to FCS school and you think, okay, I'm going to play here. And it's like, you're playing behind a better quarterback.
But then they move then they have COVID, you move the football season to spring for FCS, and Trey Lance says, I'm only going to play that one game in the fall. I'm sitting out. So he does get to play quarterback for North Dakota State. They had two different guys do it, a youngster and him. So then he decides, I'm out of here. I'm done. My career's over, and I'm going to be a GA. He was hired as a GA. Stanton was hired as an analyst. You know, these kind of guys work together all the time in the same room, great buds, close to the same age. So he and Zeb are just having a great time, and all of a sudden Luke Doty gets injured. Don't know how bad the ankle is, but may not be ready for game one. So that's when someone said, I guess Shane Beamer knew it, and said, how about you go out and throw a few? You have some eligibility. So here he goes. Now, what's great is he's not nervous about the coaches yelling at him, and he's not nervous about knowing the playbook, because he was a GA who over the summer has been studying the playbook with the offensive coordinator, the quarterback coach, the head. You know, these are his buddies sitting in there. So do you think he's scared about, you know, making a wrong check or throwing an interception? He's just going to walk over and say, sorry, guys. And he has nothing to lose and everything to gain. So, but Stanton said he's really a great guy. I've heard him be interviewed. He said, I'm just a country guy, man. I just want to say, let's go hunting. You know, but Stanton said he's really confident, which you need to be.
Yeah.
But he's such a nice guy that he said, well, I'll consider doing it, but I'm not going to do it without asking the whole team. He said, I've been a quarterback long enough. I'm not going to be like a coach and force my way in and say I'm the best option. Not going to happen. So he first had them ask the team, what do you think about Zeb putting the uniform back on?
That's cool. What a cool story that is.
We'll see. He played awful last year at North Dakota State. It must be noted.
Well,
okay. He did not look good.
We'll find out what he does against
Eastern
Illinois.
They had a 39-game winning streak. Yeah. We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
Then they lost. They didn't win a national championship, and he did not. You know, I watched them play, and I go, he's struggling. So hopefully a little time off, a little time in a coaching booth with the guys will make him play better for South Carolina.
We'll be back after this on WHB. Who stayed up and watched the end of the UCF and Boise State game?
I didn't make it to the end. I watched most of it.
Did you see the end, the throw by the quarterback that pretty much ended the game for Boise State?
Where he rolled out to his right?
I didn't see it. I must have fell asleep. I woke back up and
I just asked you if you saw the end of the game.
Well, I saw the highlight of it.
Oh. Go ahead, Stan.
I watched a lot of it and I knew how it went down, but I didn't see a last desperate throw. So I don't know what happened. I must have fell asleep.
Well, it was so Boise State was driving for the opportunity to score the winning touchdown. And I liked that somebody, Chris Brown from Smart Football.
And this is about 12:05 Central Time.
Yes. Chris Brown tweeted, when someone says, hey, that pass Patrick Mahomes just threw wasn't that special, show them this. So this is the Boise State quarterback. They've got the ball inside UCF territory. There's just over 2 minutes left in the game, and it's 36-31 UCF, so Boise State's driving. They score a touchdown, and they probably win it. And he's running. He's rolling out to his right. It looks like he's going to pick up the first down with his legs. Stan, your thoughts as a former quarterback, should he have thrown that pass? How would you describe that?
Oh.
And then that end of the game.
Do not throw the ball back across your body toward the middle of the field when you're on the sideline. That's like a basic rule.
What about in double coverage? Is that that or not? Fling it up there?
Ball game.
That was third down. That's the point. Like, that's the kind of throw you make. Fourth down, you got no other chance.
Well, the other thing is you see, everyone can't see this, but he's one step from the first down line.
Right. That's
all he does is dive, and he makes the first down and goes out of bounds.
And then
it doesn't get any better than that.
First down, deep in UCF territory with a chance to win the game. I just, you know, I was all wired watching these games last night. I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to see, you know, Boise State's going to come back and win the game at the end. And they did not. So, you know, it's not as easy. You know, I just feel like that guy, he's seen Mahomes do it. Look at Jake putting it up there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, was that a good?
Jake knows I love football, and I think Jake loves football too.
Is that a good decision, Jake, to throw that ball?
I watched Incarnate Word play Youngstown State all the way to overtime.
Yeah.
Boo to the Penguins.
That's right.
They're a big Western Illinois rival.
Penguins won.
We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Something else I did not mention about that UCF Boise State game. That was Gus Malzahn's debut as UCF coach, and they were down 21-0 before coming back to win 36-31. So that was a hell of a late night football game last night on ESPN.
There was a cool storyline to that too. That Gus Malzahn had been let go by Auburn, and then Auburn's hired Boise State's coach. So now Gus Malzahn's going against the team that the guy that replaced him was playing against, so I'm sure that was pretty rewarding for him.
Very exciting game. They erased a 3-touchdown deficit and win in dramatic fashion.
And the crowd was awesome.
It was awesome. Before we get into the matchups, I wanted to ask you about, this is actually some interesting news about college realignment, so I wanted to ask you guys what you guys thought of this, because yesterday there was an interesting story about the teams that the Big 12 might be interested in when it comes to expansion. And we don't have to get too deep into this. We know what the situation is. I think it's very interesting to hear like which teams they'd be looking for. And
if they stay together and expand.
Right. It's all if. Yeah. So, but BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, and Houston right now are the teams that are the favorites that if the Big 12 was able to stay together and expand, those are the teams that they'd be targeting. I have said that I like Memphis a lot. I think Memphis would be a great fit. And Mike DeCourcy tweeted, for the Big 12 not to have Memphis near the front of its list would be a mistake. I love Memphis, and I think it would be a great for road trips. I think they're, you know, solid in basketball, solid in football, and it makes sense geographically. And I know that's not the only things we're looking at, but what would you say to that? BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, and Houston.
Well, first of all, the news last week when we were coming here on Friday was the Pac-12 made a quick decision. It may not matter because they could change their mind tomorrow, but at least they came to a quick resolution with their presidents and evaluating it and said, we are not going to expand right now. So the thought that the Big 12 and Pac-12 might go together out the window if Texas Tech or K-State or whoever might be thinking about trying to say we want to go to the Pac-12, not going to happen. And with this new alliance, which a lot of people just want to throw away and act like it's a big joke, and I do not think it's a big joke, that they now are all thinking in terms of we better think together and not trust the SEC and Greg Sankey. If he'll do what he did to Bob Bowlsby in that college football playoff discussion they had for a year, then we better be careful. So they don't have to have any contractual arrangements or play against each other. I mean, or any of that. They just need to have their eyes wide open and say we're going to talk about things and make sure we all agree what's best, not just allowing ESPN and SEC to go to be a power conference. But what, therefore, the ACC and the Big Ten, after the Pac-12 said, we're staying right now the way we have it, that allowed the Big 12 to focus back in to say the eight teams that are remaining, maybe they should stay together. I've always thought that that was the best thing, stay together. I think they need to sign a new five-year rights agreement right now. It already is 4 years into the future. Oklahoma and Texas know a lot about that. It's very expensive to get out of. It's not in a good. You're not in a good situation of trying to go someplace else. Sign for five more years right now. Say we're committed. And then you know that KU's not running over trying to say something to the Big Ten, etc. But at least they're working together. Kirby Hokut is a guy that played at K-State I know very well, the athletic director at Texas Tech. He, along with the KU head of Kansas.
Travis Goff?
No.
Doug Girard?
Doug Girard. I was trying to say president, but you call him chancellor.
Sorry.
Right?
Yep.
Chancellor.
I think that's right.
That's the word I could not get in my head. Sorry about that. Anyway, that four-man committee came up with these teams, Stephen, and I think BYU is the easiest one because they're trying to look for television value, and there's very little that any of these teams have in value. In fact, they say these eight teams that are left don't have a lot of value. That's the problem, right? We've said that 50% of the value of the big contract that the Big 12 has for football and men's basketball is because of Texas and Oklahoma. So without them, you don't have much value. You want to find value. BYU is the easy one because they have a great following with the Mormons all around the nation really care about BYU football and sports. So BYU seems a natural. Central Florida has 50,000 students. You go to the Florida market, that seems like it makes sense. Cincinnati, the reason why they think of a school like Cincinnati, they need someone that's closer to West Virginia and cover that area and make them, you know, solidify that the conference includes West Virginia and they're not hanging out there and begging the ACC. And in Houston's the giant market in Texas. So those four seem to make a lot of sense to me. I have no problem. They may not stop at four. They may go to 16 teams. But if they go to 12, those seem like four logical ones to me.
Gus Malzahn was already selling it in the post-game press conference last night. He said, this program has a chance to be elite in the near future, whatever that means. That's great. We're going to be in the mix of it. I believe that. When people compare us to the big school, we are the big school. And then this is a compelling case. All right, this may be the best point that any coach can make. He went out of his way to say, we have not only one, but we have two Chick-fil-A's on campus. Well, there it is. I mean, dude, Jake, Eddie, you would agree, right? I mean, that's
when
he's making these points, like this is why we should be in a big country. And, you know, Gus Malzahn says, hey, we don't only just have one. We got two Chick-fil-A's on campus.
How big
we're
campuses.
The biggest. Like,
hey,
and
like, but we got two Whataburgers.
So right. So you appreciate
it. Did you see Hard Knocks with Jerry Jones talking about how much he loves Whataburger?
It kind of freaked me out that he likes to let it sit out for an hour and a half before he eats it sometimes, and he doesn't.
It's so funny.
It.
I think he's just pining to be an owner of Whataburger. He's hoping that Patrick Mahomes will call him and let him own some here Whataburgers in Kansas City. And I'm driving to Dallas today. And so I'm going to go down where I'm going to start hitting some Brahms and some Whataburgers as I head south.
And so the
both
story
places
was
I like.
That the meetings of the Big 12 athletic directors early this week resulted in the league targeting four schools, BYU, Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston. And then Terry Mohajer, he had no comment. He's the AD at UCF. He was at Kansas. He was at UMKC. And so there's a lot of things that make sense there. And UCF, I mean, that is they've already shown they could be elite in football.
How about a play-in game last night? If you go to the next teams, you mentioned Memphis, right? They could be up. South Florida could be another team that's thought about. You know who else? Boise State. Boise State believes they play football at a high enough level that they would like to be included in something like this, and they lost a head-to-head game to Central Florida. South Florida, none of this should matter, but people's reaction like, Cincinnati plays great football. Oh, they do? They're in the top 10 this year, and they played great football last year, but is Cincinnati really a football power? It isn't amazing, like, if you're good at the right time and people don't think ahead. So
let's
now
see.
Cincinnati seems like, wow, they're a dominant football team. No, they're just a decent football team.
Kelsey went there. That's enough for me.
I don't think that they really care that much about who's that good and who's not. It's, like you said earlier, it's about the television households and all that. And the thing about Central Florida, we talked with John Kirby about this. He threw them out there right off the bat, said they're the best prize that anybody could get in a big conference. You think of them as a directional school because Central Florida's in the name. Their undergrad enrollment's 61,000. It's bigger than KU and K-State combined in terms of undergrad student population, and it's in a big media market. You know, and so...
And a Big 12 plays a bowl game. They have a tie-in with Orlando as well. So just... And Houston, what? Houston's what, a top 10 market in America?
top five, I believe.
You get Kelvin Sampson back in Allen Fieldhouse. I know you want that.
I love Kelvin Sampson.
You know, Cincinnati's had a pretty good run of football coaches.
Yeah, they have.
Mark D'Antonio to Brian Kelly to Butch Jones to Tommy Tuberville to Luke Fickell.
Very good.
Yeah,
and it's not top 10 teams all the time. I mean, they're just good, solid teams.
But it's a decent media market, right?
Right. Like their win totals since 2007, 10, 11, 12, 4. 10, 10, 9, 9, 7, 4, 4, 11, 11, 9. I mean, it's pretty good.
Well, 7, 7, 4 counts in there, too.
Right.
I mean, and they're not playing in the Big Ten. You know, so Cincinnati's fine. Right now, they're a hot commodity. And if it matters, South Florida got beat, I think, 45-0 by North Carolina State last night. They were playing as well. So if we go to 16, there's a whole another wave of teams. But those four seem pretty logical and solid. The big problem with those AAC teams, all but BYU and the ones we're talking about, they've got a 27-month lead time from when they say we want out to when they get out without paying extra money, et cetera, without further negotiations. Now, you might say, the further negotiations will be just fine. They'll be easy. There's money everywhere. But remember, the Big 12 is looking at reduction in income. That is the big thing. In year five, the next 4 years, they're going to get paid a ton of money. And if Oklahoma and Texas leave early and they each add $80 million each to this group, they got a lot of extra money. So things are going to be fine for the next 4 years. But in year 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, and 15, 20 from now, are they going to be getting fees that are two-thirds as much as what they used to get? Half. You know, who knows? So you can't just say, we'll help Cincinnati buy out. No problem. We'll give them a bunch of money as the Big 12. Really got to be careful about this. So it's going to be interesting. Does Oklahoma and Texas really stay in the Big 12 for, say, 3 of the 4 years?
Hmm.
We know they're playing this year, but it seems like I thought they might get two in and then go. A lot of people think once you say you're leaving, you're going to find a way to negotiate out of it, right? We've seen A&M and Nebraska and Colorado and Missouri leave the Big 12. They didn't hang around forever. So most logic would be Texas and Oklahoma are going to find a way to leave, but that's going to be a big amount. And for the Big 12, they may not be able to get those other three teams in as fast as they want. So it's like Oklahoma and Texas might be a placeholder for a little while to continue in the conference.
All right, so Stan Weber's in studio. We'll move on to talking about the games that are going to take place this week.
Tonight.
Right, let's talk Nate Buchady tonight. You don't have to wait till tomorrow like Stan and I do to watch football games. And Stan's, you're leaving right here. You're driving. You're getting the car going, aren't you?
Yes.
You're heading right down
to
Dallas.
I wanted to be
Dallas.
Here with you guys.
That's right.
And then I'm driving toward AT&T Stadium where K-State plays Stanford, 11 o'clock.
Are you just going to go right to AT&T Stadium, go up to the booth, and just sit and wait?
You know, I wish I could.
I know you do.
Wouldn't it be great to say I spent the night in AT&T Stadium?
I think you've just planted a seed. Yeah. Stan's going to consider
you're
this.
You're up there in the broadcast. He's like, okay, all right, I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's see.
Come on, let's go.
If I would have flown with the team, which is my normal routine, they leave at 1:30. They'll land down there in Dallas, and they'll be in AT&T Stadium by 4 o'clock doing a walkthrough, getting used to looking up when you're catching a pass. Instead of seeing the bright blue sky, you see this big giant scoreboard and the dome, and all those kind of things. Get over the venue you're playing in and get back to football. The player's going to do that, and I would be on a trip walking around in awe, except for I've been lucky enough the Big 12 football meetings, preseason meetings, are on the turf every time. So
when I went down there, I walked. It was like I was in Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. I was walking around because I went down there for a fight, and I was all excited anyway because it was a Canelo fight. But when we got there super early, I said, hey, we're going to walk around.
Sure, man.
And it was the whole time, because you, of course, you know it's going to be great. And of course, you hear about it and you read about it, but it's one of those things. And then, like you said, video board, you get in there.
It runs from the 20-yard line to the 20-yard line.
It jacked with me so much. We have pretty good seats. I can't, like,
it's hard to even look. The fans in the upper deck just watch the TV.
I had whiplash from looking up and down and up and down. But Jake, have you ever been in that stadium?
Not once. That's one of the few NFL stadiums.
I remember going to a Texas Rangers game, and the stadium's right over on, like, you can see it from the Rangers stadium, and just seeing it from outside, like, the monstrosity of the whole thing.
It felt like the
crazy.
You know when you walk, like, maybe the suite level, and you're walking through where they get the food, and it was, you almost felt like you were in someone's house, like a mansion.
Yeah.
Good God.
The legitimate art that's there. I can't even recognize what is legitimate art. That's my problem.
I
walk
like
by like a multi-million-dollar art piece that Jerry Jones' wife has. A lot of places where they have escalators to go from one level to the other, she's got unbelievable famous art up on the walls and special paintings. And I, that just went right over my head. I mean, I've been around there. I've been to a game. I've walked around. I've been there three times at least for Big 12 media days, and I just walk right past that art. Like, I don't even notice it's there until on Sunday Night Football, NBC goes, here's a great art piece by this famous artist. And I go, oh, I had no idea. But it's everywhere.
It just, and the video board's great, but I'm like a cat. With the, they're saying, hey, look, there's a little ball of yarn. I'm like, oh, and it distracted me the whole time where it was mesmerizing. And it almost took away from me actually watching what
should
was
I
in front
of me. Should I watch it live or should I watch the video?
Right, exactly. And so
now, I guarantee you your choice will be video board.
Right, because it's like a magnet. You can't not you
60
can't look away.
Yards wide with an HD ratio.
So for K-State fans who are going down that have not had a chance to go to that stadium, congrats. You're going to have a hell of a time watching your team at that facility. Before you do that, I want to ask you about Kansas tonight. It's their season opener, first game for Lance Leipold taking on South Dakota. So if you're giving some advice to your good friend here, Nate Buchady, and say, look, this is what you're looking for tonight. It's game one. It's one game. But certainly there's some good things, some positives that you'd be looking for indicating, okay, now, Kansas has a real coach that knows what he's doing, that has a plan. What are you looking for tonight out of this?
Well, you want just crispness in everything you do. Like if it's fourth down and it's time to put the punt return team out there, just the way they enter the field. If everybody knows who the 11 are, what they're going to do, what the plan is, and carry that out, it sounds so simple, but it is so critical to just know what you're doing.
Well, it hasn't been simple in the past, as Neil said.
Right, I'm just telling you. If they come off the ball and play with energy and they're helping each other off up after a run, the linemen are grabbing the running back and saying, let's get back in the huddle if they're going to huddle. I'm not sure they do with Lance Leipold. But just that energy level and the purpose. Next thing you look at, lack of penalties. Next thing now is if things don't go well. And this is the big one. And it's unlikely because Kansas probably is well coached enough and better than South Dakota that they could easily control the game, get ahead. But let's say they kick two field goals and then somehow South Dakota gets a cheap touchdown on a stupid fumble or something, and it's 7-6 South Dakota. Lack of panic is the number one thing because you cannot get that look in your face that all the KU students are going to have if it is 7-6 midway through the second quarter. Oh, crap, here we go again. We are Kansas football. They cannot have that mentality, and that's what I think Lance Leipold has them prepared for. Play the whole game. Ohio State was down last night. You know how big a disaster it would have been to lose to Minnesota on a Friday night to start the year for Ohio State? I mean, that is a disaster for what they believe they are, but they couldn't think that way. Bob Stoops came on at halftime. He's a new analyst, right, for Fox, halftime show and pregame. And they say, well, what does he need to do? And say, just stick with what we do. Believe in ourselves. Keep executing. We're going to be fine. We're a good team. And that's what he's got to say. We're better than South Dakota, guys. If they're down 7-6 at the half, don't panic. What has happened in the past with other coaches? Panic. Mm-hmm. Kansas ends up losing the first game in an unbelievably embarrassing fashion because they're going, oh, crap, we're going to lose. And they give the game to the other team. Can't do that. Make South Dakota earn everything, and Kansas will come out on top.
So, and the thing about South Dakota is they're not like North Dakota State, which is a powerhouse every year, can go beat Division I teams on a consistent basis. South Dakota's record, they went 1-3 in their small season last year. The year before that, they went 5-7. But the year before that, even though they went 5-7, they played, you'll remember, they played K-State to a 27-24 game. So if they can play K-State to a 27-24 game, they can play KU to a close game, especially a KU team has been down forever and has a coaching change. So, it's I think that all KU fans are prepared for the idea that this game might not be be some automatic win or something like that.
Don't be embarrassed to win by one.
Dude, just win. Yeah, I mean, just,
there it is.
And so
that's the mentality. It's got to take over everyone.
Yeah.
In the stands, when you're tailgating, before the game, everybody, you got to join in. You can help your football team. It sounds crazy. How can the fans help? You can help. If you're like, we're with you, we just want to win this game tonight, we're not embarrassed about who the opponent is, we're not reading Twitter about Missouri fans saying, well, what division is South Dakota? You're really fighting them in a close game. You cannot think that way. Just win the game before you. And if everyone joins in that mentality, that's how you start gaining the traction start moving the program forward.
Another interesting factor tonight is going to be, is it going to be one of these big rainstorms coming in again? You know, because I know there's this wave that we're in right now, but there's another one coming tonight.
Wow.
And so if it...
Gary will tell us all about that.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Gary about it, because if it's the way you guys described your drive into work today, that could really...
It was bad out there.
Throw a monkey wrench into the game.
There were a couple times like, I should... Well, other people pulled over on the side of the road. I don't know, when you were driving, they're like, should I just pull over?
Two people were on the side of the road, but they didn't decide to pull over, unfortunately.
Right.
Well. I mean, it's... I saw a couple of wrecks that have occurred. And I couldn't believe it, because there's not that many people driving in the morning when I'm coming over here. You guys laugh because you get up way earlier than me, but I'm driving over here between 6 and 6:30. Not a ton of traffic at that time of day. And here I see, in not that long a drive, two different places where there were wrecks. I'm going, wow, it is a lot more. The roads are a lot more slippery than I probably understand. The water's puddling up faster than you can imagine.
Well,
so.
Couldn't see anything. And I don't know if you realize this, Stan. A lot of people not on the road, 6 or 6, home watching 38 The Spot.
Yep.
And so they just don't have...
I heard it was destination TV.
Right. Yep. They're just sitting
is
waiting.
That true?
They don't leave until 7:01, and that just... So Jake has told me. So I don't...
Well, Jake told me I got to come in here so we can spend some time on television.
Right. That's exactly right. You know, it's the
he
TV.
Probably doesn't remember that. That's been a long time ago.
Well, how long ago was
I
that?
Remember. Year and a half, 2 years?
Oh,
yeah,
he remembers. If you said like it was 6 years ago, then he's not going to.
2 summers ago.
He's not going to grasp that.
I got a question about that. So there are some things that he did, enjoyed, watched, was associated with, et cetera, that he doesn't remember?
Me?
Yeah.
Correct.
Is that true?
That's facts, yeah.
That is an important fact for my mind to take, because when I joke with Jake about he needs to watch last year's Super Bowl, I thought he actually had in his mind the history of the NFL and watched all these Super Bowls. But that checkbox of he watched it might be there, but he may not remember it.
Super Bowls are pretty good, though, right?
My recollection of the Super Bowls.
Have you forgotten some Super Bowls? That's why you can get this one?
I could tell you stories about me going and watching a live football game in person, and then having to go home that night and that morning before I came in and have to rewatch the game.
Yeah, any stories about any concerts you've been to that maybe you didn't?
Not that we share that aren't really
right.
Not relevant.
Well, I'm just saying.
There's one that's kind of relevant.
I went to a Chiefs-Cleveland Browns game that I don't remember the second half of, and.
There's like certain things. We have a pretty good grip on these guys.
Okay. Like Super Bowls, he remembers. You think?
Yeah, but like
Super Bowl's a whole different story.
If you want to know anything about the the 2014 ALCS, ask somebody else.
Yeah,
you don't need to bring him on the conversation.
Yeah, game four of the
But
those are some great memories, though. For us, some great memories.
A lot of people there are.
Yeah, Bloom, I remember.
That was right,
kind of.
So Nate Bucati, any other thoughts or comments about Kansas and South Dakota tonight, Friday Night Lights?
The biggest storyline for KU is going to still be the quarterback. Is it going to be Jason Bean? Is it going to be Miles Kendrick? Those seem to be the top two candidates.
And maybe this is one of the, besides getting the coach right, one of the biggest examples of why KU struggled. Isn't that the story every year? Like, we never know who the quarterback is?
They haven't had a real quarterback since Todd Reesing. They've tried a lot of different approaches, and it might take Lance Leipold some time to find his guy, but somebody's going to have to play this year, and it could be both of them tonight. I wouldn't
Jalen Daniels isn't bad.
And he could play, too.
I don't know which of the three is going to play, or a combination of each.
From what I read, it seems to be that Kendrick and Bean seem to be the front runners, but maybe not. I mean, Leipold's played very close to the vest and has kept practices close, so it's going to be anybody's.
My mind is wide open that it could be any of the three.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. They all kind of bring something different to the table. And they all have some weaknesses to their game that, if you could combine them all, maybe you'd have exactly what you want as a quarterback, but he can't do that. So I think they're going to try to run the ball a lot. We'll see if they can have success. I mean, other coaches have tried that at KU, but you can certainly understand why. So we'll see.
There's a, and I'll retweet this for people that want to read it. There's a good article from Jesse Newell about why Buffalo was so good at running the football under Lance Leipold. And so if you want to, that'd be a good companion to tonight's pregame. You can listen to the game, of course. Nate, where at?
What's right here on Sports Radio 810 WHU.
You son of a gun. Mm-hmm. We've got Stan Weber in studio. When we come back, We will get Stan's thoughts on the game that he's going to be driving to right after his segment with the Border Patrol is over. It's going to be Kansas State against Stanford at AT&T Stadium. Kickoff is 11 a.m. tomorrow. We'll get Stan Weber's thoughts on that after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, Stan, maybe some K-State fans are already on the road heading down there, a little bit ahead of you.
There's going to be a lot of people heading down, I'll tell you that. I've heard so many friends saying they're heading down or their kids who are in college are. So,
what do you think? How many K-State fans do you think will be in the stands?
I'm going to say 30,000.
Damn. How many Stanford fans do you think will be there?
3,000.
Yeah. 30-3. Well, slight advantage for K-State.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if not, you know, holiday weekend, maybe even more. Who knows?
Could be.
That's wild. What a great place to go.
The desire to have football back seems to be pretty universal with anybody who cares about sports. And if you watched, like, any games last night, like UCF, the crowd, just the excitement level that you saw in Minnesota, just to go back and party and have fun.
Nothing's better for fans than football when it's done right. It's just so exciting.
There's a lot of K-State grads who end up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or even in Texas around there. So if they want to go watch K-State play a legitimate opponent, a Pac-12 team like Stanford, then it's right there for you. Some people just want to check off that they went to that stadium. And this is an easy one to do it because you may hate the Cowboys and say, I don't want to go watch a Cowboys game, but I would love to see AT&T Stadium. It's a destination point, just like you said, to walk through.
It's worth it.
So, you know, maybe it'll grow, but 30,000 is a big number.
Right. No, it's unbelievable. For K-State fans that haven't had a chance, well, this is the first game of the season and are looking forward to watching the game, give us some things to look for tomorrow from the K-State perspective.
Well, first of all, on offense, one of the big questions is going to be before us is, will Stanford, a team that loves to play man-to-man defense, go and do that a lot? Because if they do, then that means Deuce Vaughn, when he's lined up in a backfield, is going to be assigned to a linebacker in man-to-man coverage. And do you really want to test that he might catch a 7-yard pass and have to beat one guy to find the open field? Or does Stanford get forced to play more zone just to protect against the one weapon they're most scared against? So that's one thing to watch tomorrow. Obviously, Deuce Vaughn is a superstar player. It'll be fun to watch. Joe Urban's a good running back who was really expected to come onto the scene 2 years ago and didn't do much, ended up redshirting. So those two backs will be good. But it's about Skylar Thompson. I mean, the kid from Kansas City right here, Fort Osage, he's did so much as an athlete in high school, basketball, a state championship in football and all that. He's in his sixth year. That freeze year has allowed K-State to have some really good players come back. Noah Johnson, the center, is a great leader. The whole offensive line's back, and he's the guy that really makes them go the best, only because he has a sixth year that he can come back and play with that freeze year. Is he back? Yes, he is. And Skylar Thompson. Skylar Thompson, this offense fits him perfectly. It's about accurate passing, understanding before the play is snapped what the defense is doing, where the weaknesses are, where to get the football, and a little bit like Patrick Mahomes in the sense that Patrick doesn't just throw to Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce. He throws to whoever's open. And Skylar Thompson is as good at that as any quarterback in the country in college football. If you run your route correctly and you're the guy that needs to get the ball, he delivers it accurately. So he orchestrates so well that it should vault K-State's offense from where it was last year, two steps forward. And he also wants to be here. You know, he could be trying out for an NFL team, or hoping he was on a practice squad, or being in the business world. He appreciates he gets to play college football after being hurt. So Skylar Thompson's the real story. He has an experienced quarterback, and Stanford's quarterbacks are going to be new. They're older guys, but neither of them, they have two quarterbacks that are pretty even, neither of them have played very much. So K-State has an offensive line that started last year. They have a quarterback that's back, and they got Deuce Vaughn on offense. That is going to be an improved offensive unit. Got to convert on third downs. Will K-State be able to run the football? Both Stanford and K-State want to lean on running the ball at times. Can they do it? Stanford gave up a lot of rushing yards last year, but they had injuries at the linebacker position. And K-State gave up a lot of rushing yards, especially in the last game against Texas. will they be able to step up and play well on the inside? On the defensive side, the guy that you're really happy to see back, the star defensive player, is Jerron McPherson. Again, sixth-year guy, would not be playing if it weren't for the freeze year. And then a guy that might make a difference that is really going to be interesting for all of us to watch is Timmy Horn. Only four captains for the Wildcats were elected. They're going to have four captains and then maybe have another one or two per game that join them. But of the four captains, two are on offense, two are on defense, and they're all basically sixth-year type guys. I mentioned Noah Johnson and Skylar Thompson. I mentioned Jerron McPherson. Do you know who the fourth guy is? It's Timmy Horn. Timmy Horn played at Charlotte for his whole career, and now, because of an extra year of eligibility, is at K-State. And he, in just a few months, earned the praise and belief of the football team to be named a captain. He is a big, oversized dude. He has a great personality. You've seen that probably in his interviews. But can K-State rely on him, along with Eli Huggins, a returning defensive tackle? Can they stop up the inside run game and make it hard for people to run the football, protect the linebackers? That is a big part of K-State football. And then the transfers, especially on defense. Russ Yeast comes in from Louisville. He's a fifth-year senior. He'll be the free safety for K-State. Julius Brents comes in from Iowa. He'll be a starting corner for the Wildcats. And Reggie Stubblefield transfers in as well, a sixth-year player. He'll start at the nickel position. So you've got a lot of new players who stepped in. That's four starters for K-State right there. That eligibility probably would have been done or wouldn't be at K-State, would have to sit out a year. They come in and are part of the starting unit. And Jerron McPherson, the best of them, a K-Stater, gets to come back for another year. So you hope the defense takes a big step forward with the transfers and having McPherson back.
You bringing up the transfers, I mean, I could tell the coaching staff really excited about some of the guys that they got in. Do you expect those guys to have any, I don't know, do you think they hit the ground running, or will there be some maybe more, should fans be a little more patient with those guys since they haven't been around the program as long? This is going to be a new thing that a lot of teams see around the country, right, with the transfer portal and all that. What do you think on those terms?
Well, I think the statement that you just made on a generic national basis is very relevant, okay? It's great advice. Have a little patience. It takes a while to develop and become part of the family and get used to how your coaches react and what uniform you have on and all those kind of things, the different language, the everything. It takes some integration period of time. But, crazy as it seems, to answer your question for K-State, no. Because this is where Chris Kleiman separates himself as a coach. This is one of the great things that he does, is the entryway, the red carpet that you have when he says, you fit into our program. He said he vetted these guys, did not want them to be a part of the program. They did not fit into the K-State way of doing things. That's his number one criteria, not how good you are, how fast you are. Will you fit into this program? And once, if he's correct about that, and it appears he has been on this time of getting transfers in, if he's correct, the red carpet comes in and they integrate immediately and it just meshes all together very quickly. So I see no issues. These guys are a part of the K-State football team. And I guess the best example is Timmy Horn's a captain.
Right.
So, no, I do not expect give them a quarter, a half, a game or two. No, they need to hit the ground running and play big-time football. And that's what happens when you're not playing an easier school in the first game and you don't have any preseason games.
Yeah. No,
Alabama's good enough to do this every year. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we'll play Miami. You know, they're not scared to play Miami. But for K-State, they play Stanford. They play Stanford tomorrow. And they better get ready to go. So there's no excuses. And I'm not worried about it at all. Not even a question mark. I think they're just as ready as everyone else because no one got much out of last year.
Right.
You couldn't even practice very well. You didn't know who was there. Suddenly say, oh, he's a close contact. Oh, wow, he was an important backup. I thought he was going to get some reps this week. Nope, he's not playing for 2 more weeks. 3 weeks from now, he might play if we're going to have all the games. You know, even the games were up in the air last year. There was nothing normal. This is so much more normal, and Chris Kleiman is so good at this. He and his coaching staff are on the same page so well that they can mesh the new guys with the Skylar Thompsons of the world and make it seem like they've all played together for 2 years.
Give me some of the main playmakers on both sides of the ball for Stanford that we need to keep our eyes on that K-State is going to have to deal with tomorrow.
Well, first of all, their best player is Austin Jones, a running back. He led the Big 12 in the Pac-12, I should say, in touchdowns last year. The quarterbacks are some question marks. Their offensive line is returning and pretty good. Elijah Higgins is a wide receiver that they didn't feature that much last year, but I think he's a really good player. Bryce Trimmon is a big, tall guy at wide receiver, has great hands. He's a matchup issue when he's playing against cornerbacks. And on the defensive side, I really love Kendall Williamson. He wears number 21. He plays safety, but he loves to come in and play down in the box. Think of Tyrann Mathieu, how comfortable he feels up there. Just look at the Chiefs for a second. When a running play occurs, if Tyrann Mathieu happens to be lined up near the line of scrimmage, when he goes up and makes the tackle, if you didn't see the number, don't you think it was a linebacker making the tackle? You see what I'm saying? It's not like a safety dragging him down, like, oh, man, I caught you 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage because coach had me in this position, or I blitzed. No, he comes up and hits people. He runs past other defenders. His reaction time. So watch number 21. He could cause some havoc out there, Kendall Williamson. And then our big guy wears number 4. He changed from number 34 to 4. Thomas Booker has 99 career tackles, a longtime starter, and weighs over 300 pounds in a defensive tackle position. He'll line up with the nose guard sometimes. He'll line up and down the line of scrimmage, and he is really a guy that gets after it for him. So those are the guys they feature. But these two teams are mirrors of each other. It's not about having a bunch of superstars. It's just go take the game. 2016, K-State played to start the season at Stanford. It's the only time K-State and Stanford ever played. Christian McCaffrey was the guy who was playing for him. That was a whole different scenario. It was like, there's one superstar out here that can go win the game by himself.
Jake says he was good. Can't get anything past him.
Good.
Yeah. So this is not the same thing. Stanford has a bunch of players that they rely on, but they're going to rely on not making mistakes, being physical all the time, being indifferent if they're going to run or pass. It's 3rd and 7 at Stanford. They may run just because they keep you off balance. They'll, in one formation, have no backs in the backfield, shotgun. Next time, they'll have one back in the backfield and 3 wide and a tight end. Next play, they'll have 3 tight ends, 2 running backs. They want to be completely indifferent. They want to be a powerful running team. They want to be able to throw the ball. And they both are very comfortable, both K-State and Stanford, are very comfortable with a 4-yard completion. It's not Chiefs football, like it's just a bunch of fun. When the Chiefs gain 4 yards on a pass play, like a down-the-line throw, you just go, oh, man, that defense made a great play, right? Because the Chiefs only made 4 yards. I'm not talking about that. It's not that easy. They're going to run routes. The quarterback's going to drop back, and he'll hit a tight end. He'll catch the ball. The defender will be right there and make the tackle, and you go, 4-yard gain. A lot of defenses in modern football go, we won that battle. Stanford and K-State, they'll walk back to the huddle and go, no, we won that battle. We gained 4 yards. We had diversity in our offense. We made you cover everything, and we don't mind having 3rd and 2 and 3rd and 4 plays and making those plays. A lot of teams don't like in modern football to have 3rd down plays. It's very nerve-wracking. You usually want to get a 1st down in 2 plays. Bang, bang. No huddle. Be fast. Throw. Boom, boom, boom. Have big plays, right? These guys are very comfortable going, yeah, we gained 4 yards, and we gained 4 yards. Let's get in the huddle. We'll get this 3rd and 2. Will they be able to convert on those 3rd and 2s? Which team's going to win those battles is going to be very interesting. Should be very close. They're two mirrors of each other. And I'll say this. I don't think either team is going to lose the game because of first game issues. That happens in college football a lot. You have one block punt all year. It's the first game when you make a mistake, and then you clean that up. These two teams are smart enough and have the type of players that they shouldn't be making first game mistakes. It should be a legitimate football, close, a fairly low scoring, kind of old school NFL type of football.
You mentioned block punt. Usually the answer to this question is Kansas State. Is there an edge in special teams that you see anywhere?
Well, until proven otherwise, you always got to think K-State has an advantage.
Right.
But the Wildcats will be using a new kicker, and Blake Lynch was very, very accurate last year, hit that 50-yarder against Oklahoma to win the game in the last minutes of the game.
That's always scary in college when you have a new kicker because you have no idea.
And Stanford, if you want to watch something interesting, Stanford's PAT and field goal block is so unique and so well done. They overload one side. You can't hit the center nowadays, but they overload one side. It's almost like it's a rugby scrum, almost like 3 deep. Does that make sense? Like Stanford has like 3 deeps worth of players, and then when the ball snapped, they just push forward, and they're going to move you back. And you cannot jump and jump over the line in college football and land on a offensive player. It's a penalty. So they have the big guys just move forward, move it, the line of scrimmage back 1 yard, and then those other two layers run and jump. And they got guys who are athletic, time it out well. It's crazy. They won a game last year because they blocked a late PAT, and they won another game when they blocked a field goal. So they're very unique in that. Watch for that. And then for K-State, will the kickoff return team cause some havoc? You know, K-State's kickoff return team has historically been good. The punt return has also been good. Can K-State get a couple of plays in a return game? The Wildcats are more likely than Stanford to do that in this game.
But you think more of a low-scoring game?
Yeah. Well, what's low-scoring now is in the 20s, you know.
Right.
27-24.
Sure.
30-28.
Scoring by today's standards.
By today's standards. Writing things
down.
I'm not
talking about 20-17.
There, I asked him what the score is going to be. You happy now?
Well, he said 27-24. That's kind of, I mean, that's barely,
Stan's not concerned about that. He's giving you, but that's
53.5 is the number, Stan.
My advice for K-State is the same it was for KU. Just win by one.
Just win! That's all that matters.
That's right.
Or go ahead and win
by four.
It's
a big game. It's the biggest opening game for K-State since 2010 when they opened with UCLA in Bill Snyder's second term, second year.
Is it okay that Jake wants him to win by at least four? Is that all right to say that?
That's good karma because that means he would be betting on K-State.
Well, he's locked in right now.
You told some big information right now.
That may not be the best karma for you based on how things are going around.
Oh, really?
You did push, but can I tell you?
Well, if K-State, if you push this one and K-State wins by a couple, I'm fine with that.
They win by field goal if they push.
He didn't listen to us last week.
But that was
we told him to take Illinois, and he took Nebraska.
That was personal.
He liked Scott Frost's 12-20 career record after 3 years.
I dislike
it's never. What does Nate tell you? It's never personal. It's business, and he led his bad feelings towards Illinois.
That's all right. I'm okay with
that. Did you have fun watching that game?
Oh, yeah.
I almost, remember the last time I called you, you said to Orlando Brown, I almost called you. I said, you know what? I'm so superstitious. I promise you, this is what I did. I almost called Stan. Are you watching this?
He started hitting the number.
But then I said, you mentioned
calling. And then Taylor Martinez ran for 80 yards.
But then I said, bad karma. Missouri hasn't played a game yet. They got a game coming up against Central Michigan. Yep. I'm just going to let.
Yep.
We're going to let everything alone.
Yeah, don't care for others' failures until you start winning.
Because then next week I could be in that horrible situation where something's going on and then my phone's blowing up and I...
You just pulled the cord.
This is sports fan, man. This is real sports. Just think about tonight. South Dakota. South Dakota's battling. South Dakota leads in the third quarter. And Stevenson are going, come on, South Dakota, beat KU. This is going to be so funny. They go... No, I'm not going to say that because what happens if Mizzou dumps it tomorrow?
Don't invite that karma on yourself.
Right.
No, I'm not going to do it.
I was firing off.
Cheer against your enemies.
I was firing off some pointed text messages about Eli Drinkwitz at the Bishop Miege game.
Yeah, you were.
Blue Valley North. I couldn't get either one of these guys a response. I'll leave that alone.
I love nachos.
You know, Eli Drinkwitz is tweeting out some nachos with extra peppers on there. That's
my good. I have to say that looked really good.
That's Stan Weber. We'll be right back after this. You talk to Gary about the forecast. You got to go. It's your forecast. We got to drive it down there. You've got to get in your car. You got to get out of here. We can't keep you back.
Well, I'll wait a couple minutes if you want. But I don't want Gary to be mad at me or anything.
Well, Gary's mad at everyone at all times. We'll be back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, and Stan Weber. Now joined by Gary Lezak. Gary, you have very specific duties on this show today. Because we have Stan Weber here, who waited patiently to talk to you, because he's going to hop in his car and drive to Dallas, and where he's going to be calling the game tomorrow at 11 a.m. between Kansas State and Stanford. You've got Kansas with their first game of the season tonight in Lawrence, and then Mizzou is hosting their first game of the season at 3 o'clock tomorrow. And by the way, Stan and I both, man, oh, man, that rain this morning in the 5 o'clock hour, that was some of the heaviest rain I've driven through in quite some time. Lots of wrecks and people pulled over to the side of the road. That was treacherous. I know you've got lots to talk about. Gary Lezak.
Wow, you just laid out all kinds of questions. So
Thank you.
Kansas game is tonight, right?
That's right.
So the Kansas game, there's a chance of thunderstorms, but I think right now, the way things are looking, the way the weather works around this part of the world, we had the rain and thunderstorms, 1 to 3 inches of rain already this morning in the area. And this is good for later today. The clouds will linger. There's a chance of lingering showers into late morning, early afternoon. And then there should be a long break, maybe by mid to late morning through sunset. So for the game tonight, probably we're okay. We'll keep our eye to the sky, look at radar. Best chance of thunderstorms for the KU game and for the Royals game tonight is after the games. So more likely later tonight, tomorrow morning at this time again, we could have some flooding rains come in. For K-State tomorrow, what time is that game?
11 a.m.
We're more interested in the trip today.
Yeah, he's got.
There's a lot of people heading down. Are we going to make it through Oklahoma and Texas okay to get to Dallas?
Yeah.
Good.
It'll be fine. Yeah. So this is all moving out of here. So it should be in about 2 hours, 3 hours, there should be a long break. So if you're leaving, driving down to Dallas, what is it, 8 hour drive? It should be fine. Absolutely fine. So no significant severe weather or anything like that. Thunderstorms will be developing later tonight and tomorrow. Heavy rain, flash flood watch is in effect for areas just south of Kansas City. Should include the Kansas City metro area. And that's for later tonight and tomorrow morning. Then tomorrow afternoon for the Mizzou game, Missouri has a game tomorrow at 1.
3.
Kickoff. The Missouri Tigers have a game, Stephen St. John.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Let's go. Is it going to be all right? Going to rain? What's going to happen?
I think that the rain will be out of here by kickoff. All right?
All right.
So,
all right.
So the chance of rain in the morning, thunderstorms in the morning, and then should be maybe lingering showers again tomorrow like today, lingering showers and a little north breeze and temperatures in the 60s or 70s, a little fall-like. Yeah? But not bad at all. Isn't that exciting?
Very exciting.
Yeah, I know. I'm sort of shocked I'm doing all weather all the time.
Well, there was a lot of rain this morning. All hell was breaking loose driving to work.
Yeah, we came to you on time, too.
Right.
So you have, I mean, you still have... I'm not even giving you a countdown yet.
Yeah, I mean,
Jake,
you get off your chest or what?
Jake, just let us go. Don't worry about the timing. I mean, if I want to go 45 minutes, we're going to bleed right into...
Whoa!
Wow!
He just told you don't worry about time.
You're right. You're right.
Let him go.
You're the boss.
He's going to do what he wants.
I've been thinking that...
Oh, we lost Gary. What happened?
Wow.
Remember who has the power, Gary.
You see what I have to put up with, Steve? These two going back and forth, bickering.
Two
Jake,
kids fighting in a sandbox.
Mm-hmm. How come Jake's in a mood on Friday? It's Friday.
Yeah, because he thought he was going to win last night, and then Minnesota
ripped
fell
it
apart.
Right from me.
Ended up as a push, but still, you had.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like you were counting your money there
at
in the third quarter.
I was like,
then, you know, whatever.
Glad I wasn't.
Don't
dumb.
Count those chickens before they hatch, Gary.
Was it a 14-point spread? Is that what
sure.
it was?
Yeah, sure. It was.
Wow. 45-31.
Mm-hmm. That's 14 points.
Minnesota was up at the half, so that's what the problem was.
Wow. Wow. Well, hey, you know, 1 week from Sunday, there's something happening out at Arrowhead Stadium. It looks like it's going to be in the 80s for that game, so...
We're less than a week away from NFL football, Gary.
Oh, my gosh. And Tampa Bay is going to lose to the Dallas Cowboys?
Wow. Stan, you like hearing that?
Listen to that, Stan. Unbelievable.
He's speechless.
Yeah. I guess dreams can come true. But I hope Gary's right. If he is right, I'll definitely talk to you next Friday and give you all the credit in the world because it's a Thursday night game on NBC.
Do you think he's right? You said he hoped. Do you think he's right?
Well, I want to give him, you know, it's time for an exciting 3-day weekend. It's Friday, high school football. I want to keep the enthusiasm, but no. This is the Dallas Cowboys who lost 4 preseason games, got blown out by Jacksonville, and his quarterback's got a bad arm and can't throw. Other than that, they're in great shape. And the coaching staff,
it's a hell of a defense.
And the coaching staff is like weaker than weak.
Boy.
So other than that, they're in great shape.
Oh, dear. Okay, so
but Tampa lost their first game last year, Gary.
I've been convinced. Hey, you never know. Any given Sunday or Thursday.
Right.
Right.
Hey, Tampa Bay got killed last year in the first game of the year, so maybe they'll come out slow.
It could happen. Yeah. So how old is Tom Brady?
He's actually 57 years old. A lot of people don't realize that. Unbelievable that he's out there doing it.
All right. I'm going to give you the Kansas City weather timeline because this is important for the holiday weekend, and then we'll finish off with that. we'll get to Wichita. Although I really would like to go on for 15 more minutes. Although Jake,
we know that you would.
I know it's over. Today, rain ending before noon, probably in the next 2 hours. The rain's going to be tapering off. Chance of rain will go from 100% to 30%. So there's a 30% chance this afternoon and this evening. For Friday night lights for the high school football games, unbelievable. 78 to 80 degrees for today's high. Should be in the upper 60s to 70s for the games tonight. And, well, I think we're fine for Friday night lights and for the Royals game. Okay. World just got swept, so hopefully they can win tonight.
They've now lost 29 in a row to the Cleveland. So.
Things are more than that, 30,
something like that.
It is 11 in a row, but that's amazing. Cloudy with rain and thunderstorms forming. The most likely time for thunderstorms is after midnight. Chance of rain will increase from 30% to 100% by tomorrow morning at this time. Saturday, rain likely. A flash flood watch is in effect. High water in the usual spots, but watch out for those creeks, which could rise rapidly if we end up with 2 inches of rain real quickly. So could be some flooding tomorrow morning, high of 76. 76. Sunday and Labor Day, 80 to 83 degrees, sunny with light winds. Is that thorough or what?
Very.
All right. I hope you guys have a great Friday night in the big town. Have a great holiday weekend. Don't drink and drive. In memory of Nathan McDuffie and all those that have been killed or injured in drunk driving accidents, don't text and drive. So dangerous. Get that designated driver. And here is Bob Hamilton.
Well, thanks, Gary. Don't get caught in a brownout this summer. Keep your AC and refrigerator running with a whole home generator. Better call Bob, 888-4-B-O-B. Remember, 913. Or BobHamilton.com.
The Border Patrol Blitz is next right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.